One. Okay, good evening, everyone. We have a nice crowd over here. Lloyd, Arlene, Dina, Toby in person. We'll have your mother in mind, which I'm sure have an Ellie in the course of our learning. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Of course. And let's see who we got. Looks like we got Audrey, Marina, Jake, Bobby and Zadie, Arthur, Oliver, Susan, Melissa, Irwin. Wow. Okay, we got a great showing.
Good house.
Look at that. I feel like I'm reading La Havre de Lafayette Villas. You know, like the whole list of Haman's children in the Megillah. Like one breath, you have to like get it all in one breath. So, you know, it should be to the extent that I can't even keep track of who's on here. Die until your lips wear out from saying enough, enough, too much blessing. So. Zadie, you got a shout out recently. A gentleman reached out to me. I like to give credit to people's names. I'm forgetting on the spot. A person from England, and he says that for a year now he's been following my Shir Manwayu Torah. I had no clue. He reached out after our Shir previous week to give me a correction that it's Chatayani Maskir Hayom would have been remedied by me doing enough Shnai Mikra before the Shir, where we're talking about Yehuda and Tamar and what happened to his wife. And he's like, yeah, you know, you missed that pasuk right before, and it says his wife died. And you know what? That's why I have to do Shnai Mikra before I talk about the Parsha, because I was so focused on Yehuda and Tamar that I missed the pasuk right beforehand. So, I can't say it happens to the best of us. I don't know if I represent the best of us, but it happens to people. So I thank him for that correction. And Zadie, he gave you a shout and said he said that he appreciates your insights. So I'm not going to say that makes me and him and other people also. Okay, so let's so let me hand out the source sheets. You could just take a copy, pass around. I actually want to do three questions tonight. Two short ones, and depending on how much time, a slightly longer one. One question is found in Rav Zilberstein's Vaharavna from last week, one from this week, and then one from my good old friend here, the Chavetzel HaSharon, which I don't really know who he is. I mean, Chavetzel HaSharon is a very famous sefer in the yeshiva world. His name is Rabbi Mordechai Karlbach. I don't think any relation to Shlomo Karlbach. Well, I hope nothing like him in terms of the activities that he was up to. Okay, so the first question I want to deal with is as follows. So just looking at page one, again, if you could follow along, as I always say, great. If not, you'll benefit as well nonetheless, just a supplement. Question is as follows. I'll do the question outside and we'll look at his answer inside. Question is, I go to a hotel. And when you go to a hotel, there's usually some goodies that are left out for you. I always get scared, by the way, because I don't know, like, is this coffee here free? Am I going to be charged for it? I know that the Coca-Cola in the fridge I'd be charged for, but like, so I just don't take like anything in terms of like food or drink that they give me, lest I get charged for it. But let's say, you know, one time it's, you know, 3 a.m. in the morning, you're really thirsty. You don't know what the water quality is where you're at. And you take a bottle of soda, or you take soda, yeah, whatever it is. You take soda, you take water out of the fridge in your thirst, you drink it. And then afterwards you realize, oh my gosh, this one bottle of water would have cost me $7. So what do? Being the good Jew that you are, I'm not going to pay those $7. You know, I just paid on, what was it, $250 for the room for the night. But I'm not going to pay the $7 for the water bottle. What do? You go to Walmart the next day, you buy another water bottle from there for $1, and you replace the water that you took from the fridge and you put it back in. No harm, no foul. And that way you saved $6 that you would have had to pay the hotel otherwise. The question that was asked for Zilberstein is, do I owe the hotel money? Because, I mean, I took their water after all. Or on the other hand, no harm, no foul. I took the water, but I replaced it. So as far as the hotel should be concerned, that water was already always there and never left. I don't owe them a penny. I replaced that with my cup. So the question is, do I owe the hotel the exorbitant price that they would have charged me otherwise? Or by replacing what I took, it's sufficient. I don't owe them anything. That is the question.
Are they checking
the
number?
Hotel anyway?
Ooh, well, one at a time. Let's see. Audrey, Susan, yeah. And who else is waiting? Just so we can get a lineup. Audrey.
You're going up. Okay. No, I'm talking. Okay. You're going to owe the hotel anyway because the brand of water that you're replacing it with is not the same brand as the hotel's. And well, so they're going to know you stole it.
Ah, so Audrey, this is what we call a kasha na maisa. You are correct that I think deliberately hotels, you know, when they get the little Coca-Cola bottles, they get like these very special small ones with the metal caps on them.
Right. So exactly.
To find a replacement easily for it because they know people might pull that shtick. But assume for simplicity of the case that it's a regular Coca-Cola bottle, one you can easily get at a Walmart, and you replaced it. So working on that premise or that set of facts, do you owe the hotel the price that they would have charged you?
Are they checking the SKU number?
Motion number one, the question is, did they put anything in the room to inform you that there's a charge for this stuff? And if so, how much?
Very good.
That's the first question. If there is a charge that they have a lawful right to impose, once you take the product and you use it, you owe them, and replacing it doesn't help.
Very good. So let's break this down. Number one, I actually didn't think about this detail, but the hotel room informed me of the cost. Now, I might counter that, Zadie, and say that, you know, when I run a red light, there was no sign next to that red light that said, if you run this red light, you will have to pay a fine.
Yeah, but there's a state driving manual.
So my point being is that there are certain things that are so well known that they don't need to be advertised. True, maybe the hotel didn't explicitly put the price right on the bottle, but I think, you know, I don't go on vacations that often to hotels, but I think even I know that what's in the fridge over there is not given to me out of the benevolence and the magnanimous nature of the hotel, but they're trying to make more money off of me.
Are they checking the SKU number?
Vehicle and traffic law. Everybody knows whether you know the law or not. If you violate the law, you're guilty. That's a basic proposition law. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. We're in a different realm. We're talking about contract law. Contract requires an offer and an acceptance. And the parallel is there in Halakha in order for there to be a contract. The simple solution is you pick up the phone in the room, you call down to the desk, and you ask them, is there a charge for this before they take it?
Okay.
Again,
Shabbos.
There are a lot of freebies in motel rooms. They're free chocolates, they're free pen and notepad. And the one motel chain that I use, a lot of times they will give you a complimentary bottle of water once you check in, and they'll give you more complimentary water if you ask for it. So it's not a fixed thing that just because you take a bottle of water out of the refrigerator, you're going to owe them money. Offer and acceptance is the best guide for contract law.
Okay. So, Zadie, I think that's a good level of nuance. And I am Moda. Your point is well taken. So I'm gonna say the same thing to Audrey. We'll just say, for argument's sake, it's a kasha and a maisa for now. The price was on the bottle. I was fully aware of the consequence of me taking the bottle. In a moment of weakness and desperation in the middle of the night, I had nothing to drink. I said, I'll deal with it in the morning. And I drank it fully. Knowing let's say the price was momish on the bottle. Okay. We'll take
Walmart price would look different and they would know.
We'll take two more points. We'll take Susan, then Lloyd, and then we'll give the answer. Because this is only one out of three, guys. I have two more other.
Rabbi, I also have a comment.
Okay. So Susan, Lloyd, Irwin, and then we're going forward.
I was going to ask if they were tracking the SKU number one. And number two, if they put the price on the bottle, then it's not going to look the same at Walmart.
There's a sign there in your hotel room that gives you
okay, that might be.
I don't know. This is just that's the case.
I just wanted to.
If there's a sign, there should be no question.
Right, exactly. I'm saying there's no ambiguity. he knows that he will be charged if he takes the water bottle, an exorbitant amount of money. He knows the price. And the only question here is if he decides to replace the bottle, does he now owe the hotel money still? Or what he took, he replaced, and that's it. So I see, Toby, you're nodding your head vigorously. Your position is well noted. Lloyd.
Isn't there a case of a certain amount of honor as required by the Torah? That says you should deal honorably in your business association. Isn't that really the main halacha?
Yes, integrity is important. And that's that was last week's Gemara we did in Makos. We had a whole amud about not reducing the Torah, God forbid, but emphasizing certain midos in the Torah. And we talked about 11. 11 went to 6, and 6 went to 3, and 3 got knocked down to 2, and then to 1. But the common denominator running through a lot of them was the importance of integrity. So, Lloyd, what I might say is, obviously, midos are important, but from a strictly legal standpoint, do I owe the hotel money? Right. You might be right that even if legally I have a loophole around it, you might say the right thing is no matter what, I should pay the hotel. I can hear that argument. Vasisa ha-yashar v'hatov. We are given a meta-halachic mandate to do that which is ethical. Now, we can debate that, how if that falls within there. But from a legal standpoint, can they bring me to Basin theory and extract money from me on that basis? So I tagged one more person.
Sorry. Going from a different angle, if there's a price list there, it means that it's a profit center. And if they don't generate enough revenue from it, what's going to happen is they will do away with the service. And then at some point in time, when someone actually does need it, it won't be in the room.
Sorry, can you just reiterate that?
Okay.
What was the argument?
If they have a price on the product, okay, means that the hotel is deeming that as a profit center. Mm-hmm. If they don't generate enough revenue to warrant it, they will do away with the whole service. So there won't be any product in your room that you may utilize at all.
So I think, you know, Irwin,
and then at some point in time, if someone does need it, they're going to have to run to Walmart or wherever to get it, because it won't be in the hotel room.
So, Erwin, I think the point you're making is similar to what Lloyd is saying, which is there's a broader moral concern over here. Lloyd's emphasizing integrity. You're emphasizing, you know, pay it forward. Think about the next guy who eventually might lose out because of your actions. But again, from a strictly legalistic monetary halakhic standpoint, do I owe the hotel money? I know all of you here have integrity, and this isn't even a question for you, but you know, from a halakhic standpoint,
yes.
Toby says yes.
Yes.
Okay, what's your argument, Toby?
The water belongs to me. I have set a price for it, and I want to obtain $7 for that bottle of water. You are somebody who's a customer who wants that water.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you've replaced it, you may replace it, but the next person who comes into that room may not be interested in buying that water. So they've now lost their bottle of water. They've lost the opportunity to sell to a customer who actually wants the product for the price that he wants.
So you know what? I think, Toby, what you're getting to might be what he is suggesting the answer. When we get there, you'll tell me if I understood correctly or if it's a different idea. But you get the idea of a service.
I mean, that's what I was going to say.
Oh, that's the
offering.
Very good. Very good.
It doesn't matter what the water is. Ah, that's what they're doing.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to give the answer now because we basically got to. Oliver, I see your hand virtually raised. Let me just get through the answer. And then if we don't address your point, please hold me to it so I can take your question or your ha'ara. So here we go. If you want to look inside in the tshuva, it's page number 2. Just flip over a little bit. Next page. Nirish in Berega Shabafu Hiskavim Leknoso. So you know what we have over here? Again, remember we learned about Mimanav Shafi again is either way you slice it, things aren't going to wind up well. Things don't make sense. Nir shem berega shalachu iskavim leknoso. Har shalachu al piyatanaim shemira hanhalas based on alone. What's my kavana when I take the water? Is my intention to purchase it from the hotel? Or is my intention not to, which would mean I am stealing the water. So if I am planning, if I intend to do things, kedasu hudin, in a legal, proper manner, then what I'm doing is I'm purchasing it from the hotel based on the conditions that the seller, i.e. the hotel, stipulated. And the hotel does not want to transfer ownership of the bottle to someone else unless I pay the price that they stipulated. So if I'm planning on doing things the legal way, then I implicitly am buying in to their terms of the sale. However, in Natalas Abak Bokashkia, Adas Lakachto, the low Lishimus Machir Shadorish Besam alone. However, if I take the book to the bottle to drink from it, and I do not intend on paying the hotel for it, then Harehu Nechshav Gazlin, then I'm a thief. Kama Shabor Ki Besam alone, Eno Marasha Lito Bakbukim Adasha Yaksu Bakbukakir, because clearly I'm breaking terms of the agreement. They are only giving me this following condition. I paid the price that they stipulated. The Avshagaz and us. So here's a factor we need to add to the equation. The Avshagaz and Yochel Lomar Lebalav Hareishal Chalavanech. In general, if I steal something from you, I steal your, what is that? Is that a glasses case, Toby? Mm-hmm. If I steal Toby's glasses case right over there, I steal from you. And you say, okay, time to pay up. You owe me my glasses case. Pay me however much that is worth. I can actually return to you and say, HaReishol Chalafanecha. No, I have it right over here. Take back what is yours. But that's only when I'm returning the same glasses case to you. Omi Lefaneo Kamoshahu. That's only when I have the exact same thing. But if I already drank from that bottle, for instance, I steal chametz from you on Pesach, and then the chametz afterwards becomes usher because I didn't sell it, and it's basically not the same item anymore. I can't just return it to you and say, oh, I returned an item to you. It's no longer the same thing. Here's the way you're looking for. Mocher Hamalon es Hasherut. The service. They're not just selling me a bottle, they're selling me a service as well. What's the service? The service is that they put a bottle in a fridge in a very convenient location. I get that ice cold bottle middle of the night. The very reason I needed it. They provided the service. They went out to Walmart or wherever they went and they got the bottles. The Nimza Shein Atashim Avor Hamotzer Greta. You're not just buying an item. Elo Gormin Nosaf Gormin Nosam Kalumba, but there are other factors in this equation. Ushemaser Tag the Bakbuk Inamashem Avor Sheruti Hamalon. And when you replace the bottle, you're only compensating them for the bottle aspect, but not for the service that they provided you. And therefore, as Silverstein says, forget about integrity at this point, forget about integrity. You know, even if we didn't get to that point of integrity, just from a baseline, halachic, legalistic standpoint, you would owe the hotel the money, not just for the bottle, but because what's the extra money for? The service that they are providing.
So legalistically, if you took Toby's eyeglass case, yes, because he intended to deprive her of it, and then decided to give it back to her, is there any legalistic obligation there?
Well, in theory, if I didn't return it, and then I was brought to Basin and they extract from me, you're had to pay back double in the times when they did knassos. Nowadays, Basin doesn't have the power to impose penalty payments. They can only do restitution. So KFL paying double the amount, the principal is restitution, but the KFL is double, and Basin just doesn't have the power to do that anymore.
But let's say, 10 days goes by.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting my crap cut. So I've got it back, but I had to be without it for 10 days.
Right.
So are you going to compensate me for those 10 days?
All right. So it gets in, I think it's a bit of a discussion of like a grumma, you know. So by you not having your glasses, you weren't able to bring them to work and then work on your computer and you couldn't see well, so you didn't perform as well in work. So it might be, So, right. So it might be an indirect form of damage.
Sure, very direct form of damage.
Right. So you're saying that they should take into account that, you know, for instance, like let's say I steal your car. So now for 10 days you can't make it to work. Do I owe you the money that it would take for you to normally, that you had to spend to get a rental car?
Can you?
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what you're asking.
Sure.
Primary factor in lawsuits for personal injuries.
That's what I say, that, you know, a homer, you have to do it when it's an accident, then you certainly should have to do it when it's intentional.
Right. So, I mean, what basically we'll get to the question halacha is what is like considered a direct form of damage? Like we have grumma, we have garmi. Like a garmi is not say direct. I do a direct act that has an indirect damage toward you. So, yeah, it's all right. Maybe we should do bavakama as our next mistake at this point. I thought you guys were getting tired. Of the Zekin.
I wanted to do.
You see, I thought you said brachos.
Well, you know.
I said that too.
Since she was deprived of the eyeglass case, and she was very upset emotionally.
So what's interesting is, you know, you're talking about personal injury. We have a concept of five fours in compensation. Nezek tzar ripoy shevis poshas. When I harmed somebody directly, like a chovel, I harm you literally directly. So I have to pay different things. I have to pay you for the work that you're missing out on, for the humiliation that you endured, for your doctor's bills. So, yeah, I mean, those are definitely on the books in halakha. Again, how we, and you know, what's interesting about those forms of compensation is that something that you might say is mechanically indirect, I didn't directly force you to pay to go to the doctor, but it's understood that me damaging you necessitated you going to the doctor. So these ideas are definitely, yeah, halakha 101 in this. Okay. You know what we'll do, actually? We're going to skip a little bit. I'm going to skip the next question in Rav Zilberstein. And I want to go straight to the Chavos El Zecharia. And if we get past this piece and still have a little bit of time, which I don't think we will, we'll circle back to the other one. Yeah, we save for next week. Let's prep work for me, I guess. it's the last sheet. Should be the Chavos El Zecharia, or second to last sheet. I don't have it.
Sis
Chavetz Chavetz
on the top.
Yes, exactly. Sis Chavetz Chavetz on the top. So this actually should be very interesting because it actually connects to what we're learning in Makos. So what's the connection to the Parsha? Connection to the Parsha is that we talk about Yosef, Yaakov, obligations of Kibbut Ava'im. Now, I think who here is a grandparent?
Oh, yeah. I'm a great grandparent. You might be aware of that.
Might be aware of that. Okay.
Who's not a
grandparent? I detect there's going to be a lot of bias in answering this question. Is there a mitzvah for a grandchild to respect their grandparents in halacha?
Great question.
Not everyone all at once.
You respect your parents, I assume
you should respect your grandparents. So Dina says, well, it says that you're supposed to respect your father and mother, but it doesn't really say, you know, let's say your Saba and Safta.
No.
Yeah,
Lloyd? You're supposed to respect your elders.
So there's a gem. So what?
Grandparents are indeed under the classification of elders.
So Lloyd says.
Some more than others.
Lloyd says maybe there's not a specific commandment directed towards one's grandparents, but there's a general idea of niseva takum that you're supposed to rise in the presence of one who is elderly, one who is wise. We actually, you know, it's a gemara I really love in Maseches Kiddush. You guys love more than I will, but I think it's really great. In general, in halacha, we give respect to those who are like Rabbanim, those who have amassed great scholarly knowledge. There's actually Gemara and Kiddushin that talks about how they would stand up for an elderly Gentile, an elderly non-Jew walking by. They would stand up. Why? Because they respected him not for scholarship per se, not for his religious observance, of course, but for his life experience and the wisdom that comes with life experience. So there is, in Judaism, we very much respect life experience. So I don't need to tell you guys that. You know firsthand better than I do. Jake, are you raising your hand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if a child is supposed to honor their parents and the parent honors their parents, isn't the child honoring their parent by honoring their grandparents?
Very good. Very good, Jake. Yeah, you are already up to the second answer to a question I didn't even present yet. Ralph Kluger is going to talk about that. So, Jake, you're like three steps ahead of me right here. Excellent suggestion. Excellent. So what's the question? Okay, so those who want to follow along inside, it's a machlokas. So actually, if you look in the first paragraph, quotes the Gemara Makos Yud Beis Amnav 12a, wow, that's like half a year ago that we were up to that, guys. If it feels like yesterday. So Makos Yud Beis Amnav, and based on Rashi over there, the halach, so here's the question. We know that if Reuven accidentally, but partially negligently, kills Shimon, they are lumberjacks, they go out to the forest, Reuven's axe slips out, kills Shimon. Or, according to one opinion, hits the wood on the tree and the splinter goes out and kills Shimon. Doesn't matter for now. So then the relatives of the deceased have a right to avenge his blood. They're called Goalei Hadam. They can avenge his blood and they could kill Reuven to, I guess, seek vengeance for their lost relative. Nothing new for many of you. I know many of you are in our Makoshi already. So the question is, if Reuven kills Shimon, right? Shimon is Reuven's. So we got Reuven, the grandfather, Shimon, the son, and Levi, the grandson. If Reuven, the grandfather, accidentally kills Shimon, his son, does Levi, the grandson, become the avenger of the blood, the Goel Hadam, to kill his grandfather to honor his father who was killed? Okay. Again, Lloyd, right? We're not talking about, you know, we're not talking about integrity, ethics, and all that fun stuff right now. But from a legalistic standpoint, which we might be able to get some actually moral instruction from it, that's the question we're asking.
Is the Goel Hadam obligated?
Very good. Toby asked an important question, which a long, long time ago, the Gemara actually deals with, which is, well, is the Goel Hadam, does he have a mitzvah to avenge the blood of his deceased? Or is it a rishus? Or is it like, we understand that human nature and we understand the great distress you must be in, and therefore, you know, we give you a green light to do an extrajudicial killing. So that's, is it a rishus or a mitzvah? The Gemara dealt with it, and that's important for our analysis as well.
Well, the other question is, it mutar to do it?
Well, it's, of course, for, so who is it mutar for? Is it mutar? So for the relative, it's not only mutter, but it might be a mitzvah. The question is, though, what about a third party? You know, what about his friend? So his friend, according to some opinions, might be considered murder if he tries avenging his blood. Okay, so it says the halacha that's stated is that he actually does become a Goel Hadam to kill his grandfather to avenge his father's blood. And so you look at the end of the first paragraph. So you never become a Goel Hadam to kill your father, but you do to kill your grandfather to avenge your father's blood. Mikol Makom, right? This is like a really, hopefully should never be Lamaisa. This is all, you know, it's hypothetical. You know, like even more hypothetical than the Coca-Cola from the hotel, God forbid. Mikol Makom. Evil, even footing over here. Mikol Makom, Horegis Avi Aviv, you still will kill your grandfather. So what can I infer from here? It must be that the reason I don't become a Goel Hadam to kill my father is because I have a mitzvah to honor my father, which contradicts the mitzvah to avenge one's blood. But if I'm allowed to kill my grandfather, or I have a mitzvah perhaps to kill him, then that I can infer from there that perhaps there's just no mitzvah to honor my grandparent to begin with. And that's why I'm allowed to do it, unlike my father. Alternatively, you look where I put the base in the next paragraph. The Magen Avram over there? The Magen Avram says, no, this isn't a hutra, this is a dechuya. We've learned these terms before, but it's always good to remember. Hutra means something is completely permissible. So when I am driving someone to the hospital on Shabbos to save their life, it's not that I'm violating Shabbos to save someone's life. It's that Shabbos doesn't even exist in this scenario. And there's practical applications for that. Or no, it's a dechuyah. It's pushing something off. Yes, I'm being mechalal Shabbos, but it's for a cause that supersedes it. So that's what's going on over here. It's a dechuyah. No, next to column. Even though there's a mitzvah to honor my grandfather, there is a mitzvah to honor my grandparent. But there is a superseding concern, superseding imperative to avenge my father's blood. And so the question that leads us to ask is, wait a minute, if I'm honored, if according to this, if I indeed am chayiv to honor my grandfather, and I'm chayiv to honor my father, why do we give preference for honoring my father by killing my grandfather? Shouldn't the honor that is due to my grandfather require me to refrain from killing him? So why should one take precedence over the other? Why should I honor my father and ignore the imperative of honoring my grandfather? Does that make sense? Is that a reasonable question?
I have an issue. Nor is it. How can one honor his father by killing his grandfather? With his father wants his own father killed.
Ah, very good. So you're bringing in Jake Svar over here. So you know, let's skip down. Next page, you look where I wrote Teretz Beis. The second answer. We'll do the second answer first because Zadie, both you and Jacob already brought it up. So Rav Kluger says, this is in Tam Vadas, the Adarab, look in the underline, Kavan Shagol Damo Shel Aviv, Azai Zau Kvodo Shel Aviv. Ah, so what's he saying? What's the reason I have to honor my grandparent? Because by honoring my grandparents, I am honoring my parents. My parents have to honor my grandparents. So by me honoring them, the grandparents, it's a way of honoring my parents. It's only through them. You know, it's actually, there's a debate. One's supposed to give honor to an Ishes Chaver, a wife of a Torah scholar. So the question is do we honor the wife of a Torah scholar, i.e. the Rebbetzin? Either A, because by honoring her, you are honoring the husband who's a Torah scholar, or B, maybe we assume on her own merits that she's an educated woman as well, and you're honoring her for what she knows. So it's a similar kind of conversation over here. Is there an intrinsic value in me honoring my grandparents? Or is it by happenstance that it's just another way of me fulfilling the mitzvah of kabidas avicha v'simecha, of honoring my parents? If so, what does he say? Da'adar Abba, kevin shagol damo shel aviv, azai zehu kvodo shel aviv. Well, in this case over here is the exception to the rule that if the whole reason I honor my grandfather is to honor my father, but here I have an imperative to honor my father by killing his killer, then kom l'golas demo shel aviv, l'kevim shechovas kavod aviv, ino l'amachus kavod aviv, and since honor my grandparent is only as a means for honoring my father, as I've been eating done, in isul l'harges aviv, we see here that there's no Isser to kill one's grandparent in this case, because by doing so, they're bringing honor to their father. Again, just because I see horrified faces looking at me, don't try this at home. Should never happen. Not a lot of the mice. This is a fun learning exercise. And also, we're learning Makos now, so this is very on point. That's answer number one. So indeed, we are supposed to honor our grandparents. I know I'm preaching myself over here. We're supposed to honor our grandparents. But as a means for honoring our parents, usually there's no nafkamina between why I honor my grandparents, except in a case when it's in actual conflict with the interest of honoring my parents directly.
But so, does the grandfather have a chance to go to a sanctuary city?
Oh, no, so very good, very good. So if it was Bishogeg, if he accidentally killed him, then yes, he would be able to flee to an Ir Miklat. He'd be able to go to City of Refuge, not that room where everyone keeps all the scotch, the Area of Refuge.
He shouldn't expect that there would be a... I mean, from what you just said, he shouldn't expect that he would be at any risk.
He shouldn't. No, what do you mean? The grandfather?
The grandfather?
Oh, no. So here's the one essential. True, I have a mission to honor my grandfather, but only as a means to honoring my father slash mother.
And
here I have to honor them by avenging their blood, And therefore, the grandparents' kavod, which only stems from honoring the parents, this is how I honor the parents, apparently.
This pretends to be similar to honor killing.
Oh, it's certainly a form of honor killing.
Didn't we, because the Jewish religion pretty much say, no, you should not indulge in honor killing, or this is saying, yes, it's fine to do honor killing?
So you're asking about extrajudicial killings, right?
Right.
Right, so good. So I want to actually bring in one more detail, because Lloyd's saying, like, oh, this is like terrible. I mean, this is terrible. You know, if grandparent killing their grandkid killing their grandparents honor their father, it's such a mess over here. You know, it's almost like reminds me of like the Rashia Bar Rashia that we did. Like that was more sexual sins. Now, I'm going to just say the rest of it out here because I don't want to go through all of it inside. There is a distinction here. This case, it might not be a case where the grandfather accidentally killed the son, but actually, is there a case where the grandfather deliberately, the mazit, killed him? Wait, if he deliberately killed him, usually Beis Din puts you to death, not the Gol Hadam. Mm-hmm. So it's Machlokas Rashi and Rambam. Rashi says, yeah, that's how it works. That's how we understood the Gemara when we looked at Machlokas together. Rambam says, there's always a Gol Hadam when someone gets killed, unless it was out of their control. You know, because when you think about it, if I deliberately kill somebody, should things be easier for me than if I only accidentally kill somebody? And in fact, Rambam is seemingly bothered by that. Because let's say, you know, we see this all the time. People can elude the government, they can elude the police, but a determined relative, they'll hire a private investigator, they'll really make sure it gets done. They'll hire an assassin, whatever it might be. So what does Rambam say? Rambam says it's not that Beis Din puts a deliberate murderer to death exclusively, to the exclusion of the relatives also. It's that Beis Din, on top of the relatives' efforts, will take this man to court, will try him, and then give him capital punishment if he deserves it. So what is Rambam saying? This whole case over here is only a case where the grandfather deliberately killed his son. And this gets to your point, Toby. Are we talking here about a reshus or a mitzvah? Is the grandson permitted to kill, or does he have a mitzvah? He's commanded to kill. Well, it depends on the case. In a case where the grandfather, lo aleinu, God forbid, killed his son, there's no mitzvah, it's a reshus. And in the case of a reshus, your permissibility to kill your grandfather, God forbid, does not supersede the mitzvah to honor your grandfather. Whereas if, God forbid, the grandfather killed his own son in cold blood, you would have a mitzvah to avenge your father's blood. And the mitzvah, the commandment, the obligation to honor my father's blood would actually supersede the mitzvah of honoring the grandparent. And that's actually the case we're talking about over here. So not such like a happy ending still. It's an even darker case in certain ways that way. But I think it definitely sits better with me that way. That it's in a rare case, and it's already a rare case, where the grandfather kills his own son deliberately in cold blood, then you have the mitzvah of honoring your father by taking the killer's life.
Can I throw a totally different wrench into it?
Sure, Toby. So, yeah, we're at the end. You know, let's just open up for questions at this point. And then we'll conclude by 7:45.
Just to get to a more general proposition. What if, let's say, for some reason, the father is out of the picture?
Father's out of the picture.
You know, he's in jail, or he's like a real Russia, or whatever. So, you know, for whatever reason it is, you don't have... I don't know. Are there any exceptions to being obligated to honor your father?
Yeah, you know what, Toby?
What I'm asking
is, you just reminded me.
If the father is out of the picture, do you have a direct obligation to honor the grandparents, or is it only derivative?
Okay, great. So you remind me that we jumped straight to the second answer and never gave the first answer. And Toby's asked, so you're asking, is it derivative? According to the second answer, honoring one's grandfather is a derivation of my obligation to honor my father.
Right.
But actually, the first answer that he gives is that what he basically distinguishes and said, when one has an obligation to honor their father, there's really two aspects to honoring their father. One is that you're just mechuyav meshuva, you are indebted to your parents, I guess maybe because they're the ones who brought you directly into this world. And you have actually, you're not their slave, you're not their servant, but you actually have a certain, you're subservient to your parents to a certain degree. And then that's vis-a-vis your parents, you have an obligation. And then there's a mitzvah vis-a-vis God, that you have a mitzvah being antum l'makum as well to honor your parents. And that's why Ramban famously points out that the mitzvah to honor one's parents is on the first tablet, which is mitzvahs between me and God, the antum l'makum. When it comes to the mitzvah of honoring one's grandfather, I'm not in servitude to you, but I have a mitzvah.
Don't get in trouble with me.
I have a mitzvah klapei Shemaya. I have a mitzvah to God, that God, it's been adam lamakom, to honor my grandparents. So in a case where the grandfather deliberately kills his own son, he just became a rasha. He just became a wicked person. And there's no mitzvah to God for me to honor a wicked person who's not part of Am Yisrael, who has done such a terrible act. They remove themselves for halakhic purposes. They're basically no longer part of the Jewish nation unless they repent and do all sorts of things. So then there's no obligation to honor the grandfather anymore once he removes himself from the godly aspect of why I honor him. So that's the other answer. That's the non-derivative answer. That's inherent. There's inherent.
But if your grandfather's a good person.
Yes.
Then you have an obligation to honor him irrespective of the father?
Yeah, so this answer is irrespective of the father, but a grandfather doesn't have, I'm not meshubah to my grandfather, but I have to honor him because that's a mitzvah being adam l'makam. So that's the point.
What if your grandfather is crazy?
What if my grandfather's crazy?
Yes. I'm sorry, grandfather.
Just as you have to honor your parents because they brought you into the world, your grandparents brought your parents into the world.
It's a little unclear to me what the svar is, because you're right. You would think, if I have to honor my parents, I should honor my grandparents. If I'm honoring my parents due to the fact that they brought me to this world, well, my grandparents also played a pretty huge role in that as well, just one step removed. So you make a fair point, Z. Not to worry.
He's sick, and that he performs this murder under because he's out of his mind.
You're saying the insanity claim. So you're saying that he's not a Russia because he didn't do it deliberately. That's a fair point. Then do we call that a mazid? Did he not realize what he's doing? Interesting question. We're at Oliver. I know you were waiting. Oliver, did we get to your point? Oh, okay, I can't hear you. You're muted, but I think we
did. Time's up. I know the time's up. It's too lengthy.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
I guess it would be so. On both the big questions.
Okay, great. Thank you guys for joining tonight, and looking forward to finishing Makos, God willing, this Thursday night. I just want to make a plug. We're finishing Makos this Thursday night. If you're not with us yet, or if you are, certainly please consider joining us for Megillah. I was about to say it's a great Masechta. I mean, they're all great Masechtas. I'm trying to think of how to make a good plug for it. But it's a great opportunity for those who have learned Gemara before, and certainly those who have not learned Gemara before. There have been people in the class who I've sat with one-on-one outside of class and oriented them to Gemara to help them, make sure they're on the same page as everyone else. So don't be afraid. I encourage everyone to try it out. And I'm here to make sure it's a beneficial experience for everyone. All right. A wonderful night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.